Committee will come to order. I think we've fully established that the current Senate time is 10 minutes late. But I don't know if we can move up our record a little bit, but hopefully we'll try in the future as our demands become greater. Thank you for being here. We have one bill on our docket today, and we have a visitor from the new program called MNCAN following that. So first is Senate File 170, Senator Daley.
Is it okay?
Welcome to the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Senator Ted Daley. And I'm honored and humbled to sit before you and other esteemed senators and everyone assembled here today. I'd like to move for an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape and form that I'd like it to be. That's okay, Madam Chair.
So you are moving
the A1 amendment.
Senate File 170, and you have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment. So Senator Daley has offered the author's amendment A1. I think we will. You'll be presenting it. So in discussion, we'll accept the author's amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Do we have
Senator Daley?
Before diving into Senate File 170 as amended, please allow me to frame the conversation, this discussion and debate, with some brief opening remarks. I'll tell you, I'm just an average fella, an Army guy at that, with a wife more wonderful than I deserve, 4 kids, 3 of them in public schools today, one a graduate of Eagan High School, and a home in suburban America. I'm not even that handy around the house, just ask my wife. At 18 years of age, I joined the Army to serve our country, not to get rich, but to make a difference. Our teachers became teachers, I'm sure, for very similar reasons. They knew they weren't going to get stock options, but they knew they would have a positive, lasting impact on the lives of our children, yours and mine, the future of America. I'll always remember Mr. Jezeski, my world history teacher junior year in high school. He pushed us and stretched us and really made us work hard. And he cared about us. I'm sure each of you may have a teacher just like that in your past. So I say thank you to teachers everywhere. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You are so appreciated, and you probably don't hear it enough. Thank you. Sitting here listening to testimony in this committee room from a great number of sources this past month, we've heard about the importance of learning to read at grade level by the end of third grade, that in grades K-3 we learn how to read, and beyond that we read to learn. We've heard countless times about how our achievement or opportunity gap between our white children and our children of color is the largest in the nation. We've heard about how more money hasn't always yielded better results. My reaction each day is, why do we have these problems, also viewed as opportunities, and how will we all together, students, parents, teachers, administrators, legislators, taxpayers, how will we all solve these problems? While I have many thoughts on those items, today I offer just one small bill to move us just a little bit in that direction. There is still so much, much more to do. About the bill, we have 52,734 full-time equivalent teachers, and this bill affects fewer than 1/5 of 1%, or exactly 100 teachers in the system right now. We had a great hearing yesterday by the Bush Foundation, the Minnesota Business Partnership, during which they stressed the enormous positive impact of teacher quality. In fact, they cited teacher quality and effective teachers in every classroom as the most important in-school factor affecting student achievement. They emphasize the importance of well-qualified teacher candidates to enter the teacher prep programs. We want to attract and retain the best talent we can to enter the teaching profession. We must elevate our expectations. This bill moves us further along that path. This measure, this bill, requires our teacher candidates to do more than simply complete the basic skills exam. They must actually pass it, all of them. Interesting to note, I discussed this with several superintendents, and they just assumed that all teachers pass the basic skills exam before receiving their license. With that, Madam Chair, I yield the floor.
Senator Dealey? Pardon me?
I yield the floor.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
For questions?
Are there any questions?
Testimony.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dealey, I'm a little confused. The bill that you that we had in the file was pretty straightforward, and now you have an amendment, which is a different section. So the bill was 122A18, subdivision 2. Then the amendment is section 122A09, subdivision 4. So the amendment is not to the same section, and I just guess I need legal counsel because I'm kind of confused. You're incorporating a new section? So the amendment is not to the same section. This is a new section. I'm confused. Could you please explain?
Madam Chair, members, the A1 amendment adds a new section to the bill. Numbering, it comes before the section that was already there. The new section amends the section of law that deals with the Board of Teaching's rules for taking these exams and clarifies that they have to pass the basic skills exam. And it also says, though, changing the requirement from initial teacher licensure to entrance into before entrance into a board-approved teacher preparation program. The amendment also, if you turn to the very end, on line 2.34, the amendment does amend some of the existing law that was part of Senate File 170. It goes where the college and universities that have the teacher prep programs, instead of saying provide the remedial assistance and services, they have to offer those that assistance to students who don't pass those the board exams or the basic skills exams.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dealey. I just don't remember Senator doing Torres-Ray. This in the past where we had an amendment to a different section that just actually doesn't say that this is additional language. Have we? I don't remember that. But
Senator Torres-Ray, I think an author's amendment can change the bill to get it in the shape they want to, and the subject hasn't changed. They're just dealing with a different section. It's a section following the one that is in the initial bill. That is perfectly legitimate. I think on the floor, we sometimes get into those kinds of debates if we're either changing direction or trying to amend something that does not seem to be related, and it raises a germaneness issue. That is not the case in committee, and this one doesn't do that anyway. So,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dealey.
Just to address the intent of
Senator
the amendment,
Dealey.
The intent of the amendment is to change the timing. Instead of after completing the program, before you enter the program. So it's a timing issue, really, more than anything else. That was the intent.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment that we adopted, does that add any fiscal impact?
Looks like the chair is a little bit preoccupied, if I may. I'll just answer that question. There is no fiscal note for either one, Senator Stump.
No fiscal, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, no fiscal note or no fiscal impact?
I guess it depends on who you are. If you're one of the teacher candidates, it may require you to take some remedial test or remedial training if you're not able to pass the exam for some reason. But
no, Madam Chair, I was just wondering, is there a fiscal note or not?
Senator Stump, may I direct that to Eric Nauman or fiscal analyst?
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, a fiscal note was submitted and completed, and the effect was zero. Okay. That was for the base bill. This additional amendment, we're dealing with rulemaking here. It does not look to me like a major change here, so to the extent that there would be rulemaking cost, it would be relatively minor. But in deference to the process, what this language has not been submitted for a fiscal note.
Okay.
The new language, I should say.
But, Senator Stump, it's just changing the time at which the instructors or the persons entering the teacher preparation program when they have to take it. So it really doesn't could be done by statute. I think the procedures of it are probably in rule. I'm not familiar with the exact rules. But. Senator Bono.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senator Daley, I had carried this provision in our Race to the Top section of the bill last session, and so I do support what you're proposing. And actually, in the alternative licensure bill, we did say that you had to pass this before you could be in that program. So we were even having more stringent rules of entrance into that program than we had under current law. So this would then have those two sections be the same.
Just one note is that this is just for the basic skills exam. There is not a requirement to pass the pedagogy or the content area with this. This is just basic skills.
And Madam Chair, Senator Daley, right. And in fact, in the other bill, there was. So
exactly.
This, again, is still a little less stringent, but it's
moving us
right in that
arguably
direction.
In the right direction.
Senator DeCrite.
Madam Chair, Senator Daley, I have a question, and I'm not sure if you know this answer or not, but do you know how many teachers this might affect? Do you know how many teachers may not successfully pass this the first time who are actually teaching?
Well, Senator DeCrite, I'm not sure this applies to current teachers who are currently teaching. It's for those who are going to enter a teacher preparation program.
Okay, this doesn't qualify them to get a 1 year.
Senator Daley, do you have a response to that, or have I mucked up an answer here?
I do, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Daley.
Madam Chair, Senator DeCrite, there are currently 20 individuals who have completed a Minnesota licensure program and have been issued their first one-year license without having passed this. There are 43 who have completed the exam but failed the exam, completed but not passed, failed twice, and 37 are in their third and final one-year license phase. So if you add those up, 20, 43, and 37, there are 100 teachers that are affected by this. That's why I said at the beginning, less than one-fifth of 1% of the 52,734 teachers, this affects 100 at this current time.
Okay. So, Senator Daley, it partly is semantics. If you, before you have an initial license, you have to pass it. The ones that are in the pipeline would need to do a catch-up on it, but this doesn't apply to from this day forward or whenever the implementation date it would be, would not apply to somebody that's currently licensed.
Madam Chair, I would defer to counsel just to make sure that we have the facts.
Am I wrong, or what am I?
Madam Chair, I believe you're correct. Yeah, that the people who are already in the teacher programs now haven't, this didn't apply to them because they, it obviously wasn't enacted when they started.
Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your patience. You got me the first one I knew because I was preparing. I read it in the amendment. I'm confused. Please bear with me, Senator Daley. Let me ask you this question. I'm not clear as to, so you are replacing in the amendment initial teacher licensure, which that's clear to me. And instead, you are proposing entrance into a board-approved teacher preparation program, which is kind of a different thing. And then in line 113, you said, persons needing remedial assistance must be successfully remediated prior to this process. So I'm a little confused as to, I thought this process, the entrance kind of lets you go into the remediation process. So how would a teacher go about doing the remediation? The person, it's completely out of the process and will have to go back to, how would this work? I'm not clear about how this would work.
Senator Daley?
That's a good
question. How would a person do the remediation? If they don't do it, you know, within the process that exists, you're saying persons needing remedial assistance must be successfully remediated prior. So how would this work?
Well, Senator Torres-Ray, what it's saying is that you need to pass the basic skills exam before you enter a teacher preparation program. So if you haven't passed, you wouldn't enter. And of course, our colleges have been offering remedial programs. It's all too common. That's part of our challenge. So I think there may be a variety of ways if that person was it could identify what specific areas that they were weak in, they could do any number of things. Get some special help, some tutoring. They could do it through their own a regular school program or a college program to try to beef up their skills before attempting to take the test again.
I understand that, right? So what I think what is unclear to me is what triggers. So let's say I'm pursuing this and I need remediation because I didn't pass. So it's that process in there that tells me, right, you didn't pass, you need remediation, we will work with you. But in this language, you're saying must be successfully remediated prior. And so what triggers that process is unclear to me. How do I know I have to go in, enter the process, be part of the process, and remediate so that I can take the test again? Takes me out of the process entirely, so I'm unclear as to where do they go.
Senator Torres-Ray, I guess you wouldn't know if you've been fully remediated until you take the test again. And I think that's, whether there's some other process, I'm not sure if we have some sample or practice basic skills tests. I bet you there's some online that could be that a person that wanted to go forward could get some additional help and say, well, I think I'm ready to take the test again. But taking the test and passing it is what you would need to do in order to enter that teacher preparation program.
Madam Chair.
I think we have somebody at the table that would like to speak.
Thank you.
Ms. Rattel?
Yes, I am Cecilia Rattel with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And to get directly to your point, there's two different things going on. One, there is a copy of the practice test in your packets that kind of show if teacher candidates are trying to figure out what they need to get into the program or to be able to pass that test. Also, at the bottom of the amendment on 2.34, it requires the teacher prep programs to offer remedial assistance and instruction, so the third to the bottom line. And so between the prep program having to offer that remediation, having the test programs or the sample tests online, you would hope that, because it is no longer practice, they've moved into this new licensure. So it's probably something the Board of Teaching or the licensure, as more are taken, because it just started September 1st, they'll be able to get more specifics about what remediation looks like and what they would need. Right now, they don't have that full baseline. So does that answer your, hopefully?
Thank you, Mr. Rattel. Now, you had signed up to testify. Would you like to continue that while you're at the table?
Sure. That'd be wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair. You guys have all heard for like the last month now about how important high-quality teachers are in every classroom. And to not require all teachers to pass these tests before they get into a classroom just doesn't make sense. And as Senator Daley commented, right now we have 100 teachers, so a very small percentage of teachers currently in classrooms that are operating under these waivers. But I would also, question whether any one of us would want our children or our grandchildren in one of those teachers' classrooms that has not been able to successfully pass a basic skills test. And to think about it in that direction, and also to address some of the fiscal concerns that Senator Stumpf had brought up, to not require these teachers to pass the test before they enter a prep program, you could possibly be putting them into the situation where they go through an entire program, spend $10,000 or $20,000, and now they can't pass the program. So instead of spending the $100 up front and finding out they can't pass it, or maybe they don't have the skills they need, now they've spent five figures to find that out. So that is another reason we are supporting the amendment. As I already stated, there are a packet of sample questions in your handouts, and I would urge you to take a look at those, especially the writing and reading ones, as they very clearly show that, without being able to communicate with your parents and your students effectively, it's a hard thing to move those students along in the way they need to go. And as I said in committee yesterday, I would urge you to make all your decisions about teachers this year based on effectiveness and support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rattel. Are there any questions?
Yep, Madam Chair.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have clarification. Now, when entrance into a board-approved teacher preparation, so that would mean like in your traditional program, you would take this test maybe at the end of your sophomore year before you start taking your core teaching classes. So it's in a traditional setting, that's when that would happen. And so then if you did not pass and you needed remediation, this would say to me that, let's say at the conclusion of my sophomore year, I don't pass, then before I can start my junior year in the teaching program, I have to put that on hold until I can pass these skills, correct? Which could potentially put me back a semester.
Ms. Rattel?
Madam Chair and Senator Wolf, there's a few things. One is that this test is given on a regular basis, so it's not only given, once or twice a year. Also, they get the results back quite quickly because it's all online now. So even if it does take you, two or three times to take it, our perspective is it's better for you to take it up front and before you are in front of our kids or before you're in the classroom or before you're spending your money to maybe do a program that isn't going to work for you in the end. So, yes, it could potentially do that, but it would also, potentially save them a lot of maybe heartache and money. So
Ms. Rattel, it doesn't – there's nothing here that prevents them from taking it before they complete their sophomore year, any time during that time that they're ready to take it, just so they have done it before they plan to enter the teacher prep program.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay,
that's correct.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to clarify, really the gist of this is just changing current law from saying need to complete to pass. In other words, we're just changing the focus from taking the test to passing the test. Is that correct?
The timing.
Madam Chair.
No. Senator Daley.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, it's the passing, not just taking and completing, and also the timing. We're moving the timing up instead of after you graduate, just before you get your license. This is before you enter the program. So it's those two aspects of it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Daley. So is it your intent? I just have never heard of this profession decision. So please clarify this for me. Somebody has to a person who decides to go in this profession actually have to pass a skill examination before they go to school? I don't think we do this for any other profession. You're saying in this legislation, pass the skills examination in reading, writing, and math as a requirement prior to the entrance into the board-approved teaching preparation program.
Madam Chair.
Senator Daley.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Wright, we passed out of this committee a bill that was related to the alternative pathway, the alternative licensure program, and in that, those teachers, those teacher candidates, must pass not just this exam, the basic skills exam, they also are required to pass the content and pedagogy before they enter into the program. So this bill is actually less onerous to the candidates that are going into this program than for alternative licensure. So we do require it for those alternative licensure candidates, assuming that, I guess, that bill becomes law. We don't yet because it's not a law, but that's the intent with that bill.
It's just a basic skills exam.
Senator Chair,
if I may. Senator Daley, I think there's a difference in you. The language is stricken out, the initial teacher licensure, and I get that. But you're saying in here entrance into a board-approved teacher preparation. So that's a different thing, right? That's where I need clarification. I'm just not clear. You see, when you say I agree 100%, and I think Senator Nelson I think that's correct. You know, if you say requirement for licensure, I understand. But this doesn't say that. This says entrance into a board-approved teacher preparation program. So that's a different thing, isn't it? I guess I need clarification. We're talking about two different things.
Senator Wolf, did you want to respond to that, or?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, my first comment was going to be, if this is a student coming from the state of Minnesota, they should have already passed these before they graduated. So that shouldn't even be an issue with Minnesota kids. Lost my train of thought here. Entering into the program, we've already said that teachers on an alternative pathway need to show that they've passed the basic standard. So it's basically just reinforcing that all teachers should be able to do the standards. And again, if I'm not on the same track with what this is meaning, I call them standards, sorry, teaching high school, the basic skills, they should have that. They have, in traditional schools, usually you spend your first 2 years with all your generals and whatnot. So somewhere within those 2 years, students who are planning on going into the teaching program would have an opportunity to do these skills tests, which are going to be required of them in order to become teachers.
I see.
So yeah, it's just the timing and when they're getting it. Versus they've gone through all 4 years, and now they take, you know, the test at the end before getting their licensure. They're just getting it, I believe, it's just moving it to the beginning of their program versus the end of their program.
So, Senator, is your intent to have this done actually before you go through the process of learning and training?
For teacher, Senator Torres raised for the teacher preparation part of it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, many colleges do have entrance requirements, and there's a lot of college entrance tests that I think are getting at basic skills and even beyond before they'll let people into certain programs. So it's not a new concept, but it's one that I think has been more attention has been called to it because of the importance of teacher quality and the issue that our basic skills seems to be where we are being challenged. You know, our students are having difficulty, whether it's in their college program. So I wouldn't think it'd be too much to expect that those who are wishing to pursue a career in teaching be able to demonstrate that they have a foundation in the basic skills. That's all this is saying. Senator Bana.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Wray, I hear your concern. You're probably thinking, but you go to the preparation program to learn these skills, and I think the distinction is that's not what these basic skills tests are for. These basic skill tests are to make sure you have the fundamentals that we do require in our schools, that you start taking your BSCs, I think, in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you can't graduate from high school without passing these tests. So we want to make sure we don't put teachers into a teacher preparation program that don't have the fundamentals that we require of all of our high school kids around our state. So it then, once they've gone through a board-approved program, then they should pass tests that are content-driven, pedagogy-related, skills that they should have learned in their board-approved teacher preparation program that will equip them to be great teachers. These tests are not related to that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Daley.
Thank you.
What Senator Bonhoff said.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff.
You echo them.
Thanks.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to add some more detail to that, we do have a history of our higher education institutions requiring prerequisite courses before entrance, whether it be an ACT score of a certain amount or an SAT score, or certain colleges like the Carlson School of Management, you have to have a certain score before you enter. Our medical students have to have a certain score on the MCAT before they enter medical school. Before I entered graduate school, I had to have a certain score on my GRE. And so this is just a prerequisite to make sure that students have those basic skills that they need so they can successfully complete the teacher preparation program.
Thank you. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to draw one distinction. I think with the alternative teacher licensure, students take that basic skills test after they've completed college. Whereas this is at the onset of them entering. And I'm not saying that I disagree with that it's a good idea, but there is a little bit of a distinction there, which is kind of getting at Senator Torres-Ray's point of when they're, the point at which they're taking this test. I still think it's a good idea to make sure they are passing it. But
Senator Sieben, they have completed college, but they haven't entered a teacher preparation program. Right. So this is just by virtue of the fact that the way some of our college programs are organized, that doesn't start until near the end of a four-year program, means that it would come before they would have a degree. But some, I don't know, is the university's program, isn't that a fifth-year program, so that you could technically have a degree before you started that? So it just says before you enter a teacher preparation program, whatever background you might have. But that's a good point, though. Thank you. Are there any further questions?
And Madam Chair, if I may, I just want to let Senator Lilly know that my first year in the Senate.
Senator Daley.
Daley, excuse me.
I'm the other Ted.
Senator Daley, sorry. In my first year in the Senate, I had a hearing about this issue, and I brought some scholars to testify. And Senator Nelson is correct. We do have mechanisms to measure skill in pretty much every profession. So this is a kind of a very particular system we have. And Dr. Sam Myers, who has done extensive research on this issue, concluded that really the profession itself is not the way we teach and the way we compensate and the way we treat the profession has not, research shows that we as a country have not elevated a position to a place where we compensate teachers and train teachers and require what Senator Nelson was describing, this rigor in terms of measuring ability. So I just find it interesting that we are legislating this particular profession separately. You know, we don't do that for engineers and for nurses and all of that. We don't talk about alternative teaching and preparing. We just say, do you have the GPA? And they would say, you know, if you're going to be a good engineer, you probably will make $150,000. So yes, you bet I'm going to have that GPA because I'm going to have a job that pays $150,000. So that was done in my first year in the Senate, and it's, I think, important research that actually exists. And I think that you are correct. We need to move in that direction, and I hope that we do.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have a question for clarification, and I don't know if Senator Daley or Ms. Rattel, if you have the answer. But these exams that we've been talking about, Are there any relationship between these basic skill exams and the testing that we do in high school? For example, if a high school graduate is required to take the grad exams, for example, math, is this basic skills test the same, more demanding, less demanding? Is there any relationship between those two things?
Ms. Patel?
Madam Chair, I don't know. I know this is a new test that was just developed. I don't know if...
There is a member here from the Board of Teaching. If maybe he wants to come up
two and members.
Help answer that question.
Identify your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, I'm John Mielek. I'm the Director of Educator Licensing with the Minnesota Department of Education. And I don't work directly with the board, but I do work on a number of initiatives with the board. The high school basic skills test is designed to see that a person knows everything they need to know to graduate high school. The basic skills tests for the teacher preparation aren't designed to those same standards, to my understanding. They're looking to see, can you do college-level work? So we're kind of talking about two different things, using the same type of a label with basic skills, but it's really the level of testing that's involved in those isn't really apples to apples.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you. And I may be misremembering here, but my thought was that the tests that we were administering in the high school level were designed to assure that graduates were able to do college-level work. It would seem like these should be close in purpose or intent. I'm just trying to figure out if I guess what I was getting at is if you have Minnesota high school students that successfully get through the testing regimen in high school, would they need to do another test, or would that be waived if those tests are sufficiently similar to the one that's being proposed? That's my question.
Madam Chair, yes. Members, the tests probably are fairly similar. I'm not an expert in the graduation test, so I'm not 100% sure that there's a strong degree of alignment. I think we do look at those basic skills tests at the college level for the teacher preparation program as being able to actually demonstrate the college level work. So I think they are probably a little bit different, but to the degree, I don't know. And whether or not a person would have to re-demonstrate that 2 years later, a year later, whatever the case may be, is something that I can't answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Mielek. We do have a Board of Teaching member who is also on the list to testify. Mr. Bartholomew, would you like to resolve this whole issue for us? Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, though.
Just yet.
Since I know you've had some interest in the basic skills tests at the high school level, can you add any insight to the difference between these two exams?
Madam Chair, committee members, Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I would suspect Dr. Madsen at the department would talk about a lot of equating studies and things like that between proficiency on the 11th grade MCA and math and where this assessment is geared. So I couldn't tell you that other than to say that it's our understanding that the basic skills tests for teachers that this bill is dealing with is, as I think Mr. Mielek said, geared at being able to do college-level reading, writing, and math. So it's, to your question in particular, that's the best I can give you. Is there a correlation? I think that's a psychometric question, which is well over my head. But it's our understanding. These are, can you do some basic college-level liberal arts reading, writing, and math?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Do you have any further words you would say before we attempt to wrap this up?
I had a really eloquent 15-minute speech. but I think the committee's conversation has been excellent and really focused on, should teachers be in the classroom who can't pass a basic skills test? And I think that's kind of, I'd like to think of almost cleaning up an oversight. The answer would be no. And then the other is, at what point would you want a teacher candidate to be able to pass a basic skills test at the back end? And again, it makes perfect sense that you'd want that at the front end, especially if you're looking at, can you do basic college level reading, writing, and math? Presumably, you'll need to be able to do that to progress through the programs. So, in deference to Ms. Farrell and the next folks, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Senator Daley, do you wish to?
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate now, I move the bill.
As amended?
As amended. Be recommended to pass to the Senate floor, and there is no fiscal impact. No fiscal note.
Okay,
or
thanks.
Impact.
Thank Madam you Chair. Very much. Is there further questions or discussion now? Senator
yes.
Wieger.
Madam Chair, I support it, and I think Senator Bonhoff gave some good background on the earlier race to the top and support. But I think Senator Hand raised a very good point on the current expectation of rigor, and if it is tantamount to what would be expected in this exam, there didn't seem to be an answer on that. I think we should allow that person to have credit then for that, so they wouldn't have to go through another three-hour exam if, in fact, it is rigorous. And maybe Dr. Mattson or someone can talk to the Board of Teaching as to, you know, is there some subtle difference? If the bottom line is college career ready in math, reading, writing, and you measure that, then, as Senator Hand was suggesting, then why duplicate? And I think we're going to look at, you know, testing as well this session. So maybe on its way to the floor, I'm not sure how fast we're going to move on this, but I would like to get Dr. Mattson and the Board of Teaching's position on whether there might be a potential waiver on having to take that test if you did have passing scores showing proficiency in these areas. And I think Senator Wolf made some reference that there's that expectation as well, and maybe that's good enough for the entry with other tests to follow. So but just make that point. And then the other is, I'm curious, has Higher Ed Committee expressed an interest in this or alternative licensure, as we do have directives to Higher Ed in here on remediation, et cetera? I'm just curious.
Well, Senator Weir, I was just reflecting on this. You know, we have had the basic skills requirement for some time, and yet we have still had high levels of numbers of students entering college that, when measured by the college standards, have had to have remedial preparation. And I think what's been more dismaying is, as I've learned at some of the conferences, in particular the Education Commission of the States, a concern that the remedial programs at the college level are not necessarily remediating. In many cases, and part of that may be the program, if it's just a repetition of what was done before and it hasn't helped them get past the hurdle. Some don't bother to take it, but once they've taken a class, they can go on and they may not complete college and not necessarily be remediated. We do have a challenge in this area, and that's one reason why I feel like I'm behaving like a pit bull on the reading by third grade, is that we need to resolve this early, because people and young people and adults are struggling all through their life when they don't have that basic skill at the beginning. So I welcome anybody to join the passion and see if we can't, you know, keep focused on it and the things that will, in fact, turn that around. But right now, you know, there is a difference in terms of what some of the college expectations are. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some difference in terms of the level that's being tested for in basic skills if they're going to be successful in a college program. And I guess the issue is that too much to ask of the people who are going to be preparing to teach our young people.
Well, so, Madam Chair, I'm not suggesting it's not too much to ask, but I
but
just,
you're talking about the repetition, if whether
yes.
that is enough.
Yeah, I mean, we have 32 colleges preparing students in Minnesota, and just.
And Senator Wieger, I'm saying that it may be enough if we weren't having people having go on to college and take remedial education.
Proficient in third grade, I agree.
No, if they pass the basic skills test
yes.
at the high school level. if that still isn't adequate in determining that they are effective and going to be successful, we still have a challenge there.
And, Madam Chair, just briefly, then I would say that then the standards aren't what we are telling the public in terms of college career ready. And as you know, we have an access committee that had worked on a number of recommendations. Mr. Bartholomew and several others, the new commissioner was on that, and maybe we'll have a chance to look at the rollout of those. So, excuse me, Senator Daly.
No further discussion. All in favor of Senator Daly's motion for Senate File 170 as amended to be recommended to pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill has been passed and adopted. And I'd like to welcome, I hope we haven't shortchanged you too much, but folks from the new organization called MNCAN that was kind of rolled out here a few weeks ago in the rotunda. And Ville Varo is the executive director. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Varo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ville Varo, and I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to come to you and talk to you a little bit more about MNCAN and the work that's ahead of us for not only this session, but hoping to come in the future. As I said, my name is Ville Varo, and I'm the executive director of MNCAN. And before I begin my presentation, I would like to just thank all of you for your serious consideration of common sense education policies that have the best interest of Minnesota's learners at heart. And in particular, I would like to extend my thanks to Senator Olson and Senator Bana for your leadership on the Alt-Cert bill. It's leaders like you that help to drive this conversation forward.
Thank you.
So just to dive right in, what is MNCAN? MNCAN stands for the Minnesota Campaign for Achievement Now. We are an education advocacy organization, and as many of you know, we recently launched our organization right here in the rotunda upstairs, and are looking forward to working with all of you, as well as the community, to make sure that some serious work gets done this legislative session. The work at hand is that we are working to build a movement of reform-minded Minnesotans who will lend their voices to speak up effectively on behalf of Minnesota's learners and ensure that every child has access to great public schools. We will organize and partner with the grasstops as well as grassroots organizations to build this coalition. We are looking to recruit parents, educators, learners, young and old, rich and poor, Democrats, Republicans, urban, suburban, and rural Minnesotans to advocate for education reform. We believe that getting state policy right will transform the way that we educate Minnesota's children. That's why the work that you all do is so important. Great policy doesn't mean, though, that we have to try to write every best practice into state law, but instead advance three fundamental principles around choice, accountability, and flexibility, things that I think all of you have been talking about for the last several years, and in particular last year with regards to the Race to the Top application and certainly coming into this year. No one type of education reform will be enough to meet the needs of all students. Instead, we need to back up our historic leadership on school choice with a renewed focus on greater accountability and flexibility to get the results that we want and we need. Alone, each of these principles is important, but working in concert, they provide a pathway to a public school system that is more effective for all students, not just a few. The model that we work off of looks like this. MNCAN is a platform for Minnesotans to speak up effectively for education. We don't build schools, and we don't train teachers, and we don't run programs. Instead, we will run a results-oriented advocacy campaign through research and policy, communications and mobilization, and lobbying to get the changes that need to be done in place. The MinCAN team is comprised of several different pieces, leading with the MinCAN board, a community relations manager, a government relations manager, and myself as the founding executive director. Christopher Orr, who is here with me today, is our government relations manager, and Marcus Harkis is our community relations manager. Both Marcus and Christopher are native Minnesotans and bring a wealth of relationships, expertise, and passion to this work. And previous to joining MinCAN, I served as the education policy director in St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman's office, as well as on the St. Paul Public School Board. Here is the list of our MinCAN board members. As you can see, this is a dynamite group of individuals comprising of civic and thought leaders, business leaders, heads of anchor foundations, and most importantly, they're Minnesotans. These folks have united their voices to remind us that we must make a concerted effort towards moving the dial significantly for Minnesota's learners. And I'm very pleased to not only to have their support, but their solid commitment that this is the most important investment we can make as Minnesotans. And that is the investment that we make in our children's education. So our current conditions, when we think about our state's future, we need to consider how we can do more to prepare our state for the challenges that we'll be facing in the next decades. And in the next few minutes, I'll be talking about things that I think all of you are deep experts, if not more experts than myself and other folks who spend a lot of time thinking and talking about this. So if you'll please forgive me and allow me just the latitude to be able to just go through some facts that I think, you know, are well known to you all to help kind of build the case for why MinCAN thinks it's such important work. While students will continue to build the basics, we'll continue to need the basics, we will also need to give them new skills by updating our K-12 and higher education system so that we prepare all Minnesotans for the challenges ahead. When we don't prepare for new challenges, our education isn't working the way that it should to maintain and advance our state's quality of life moving into the future. Right now, our educational system is an old house, if you will, that needs some updating. We aren't up to code, and so when it comes to educating our students or providing Minnesota's children the skills that they need for the 21st century job, we aren't doing it. The bad news is that when we remodel a house, if you will, think of that. If any of you have done any remodeling of any sort, whether large or small, I know we are trying to do a little bit of remodeling in our basement, that it creates temporary dust and noise and an inconvenience for the people who live in the house. On the flip side of that, the good news is that when you remodel, you don't have to start from scratch, and you strengthen what's working, but you fix what's not. And if we approach education reform as a remodel rather than a demolishing, we will be more successful in providing students with what they need to build our state and for our democracy. So the achievement gap, to begin with, just sort of the reasons why we feel this work is so important. This is, I think, a lot of the work that you all discuss here in this committee is touching this issue in one way or another. So as Minnesota's achievement gaps have worsened over the last decade, our status as a national education innovator has languished too. 20 years ago, Minnesota was the first in the country to pass a new law creating charter schools and opening up that pipeline of choice. In the years since then, though, groundbreaking legislation, other states have far surpassed Minnesota and all of our other education innovations needing to secure systemic change, leaving our state with aging policies and a growing achievement gap. As all of you know so well, unfortunately, achievement gaps have real consequences, not only just for the students whose lives are impacted by this because their choices are dwindled, but the civic and future economy of our state decreases as well. Most importantly, I think for a lot of folks sitting around this table, certainly throughout the state of Minnesota, we also think about the economic impact of the achievement gap. All of you know the statistics very well. You know, lifetime income is lower for a high school dropout as compared to a college graduate, and Minnesota is missing out on millions of dollars of revenue because significant groups of students are not achieving at the level that we need them to do. In 2009, you know that the McKinsey Group put out a report called The Economic Impact of the Achievement Gap in America's Schools, revealing that the United States loses out in billions of dollars due to the achievement gap, and that it's growing. And lastly, just to point out a little bit more, that the Minnesota's achievement gap is already costing us money every day in terms of where we choose to spend those dollars, whether it's on the front end in terms of services that build foundational pieces for our students moving forward, or on the back end, whether it's through social services or the juvenile justice system or worse. Excuse me. So most recently, the example that Minnesota that really, I think, points out Minnesota's increasing uncompetitive education policies was our failure to compete competitively in the Race to the Top competition in 2010. In the first round of the competition, we came in 20th place out of 43 participating states. These are, again, numbers that you all know, scoring only 375 points out of a possible 500. After submitting a losing application for tens of millions of dollars in federal money during the first round, Minnesota did not even submit for the second round of competition, resulting in then Minnesota losing out and a great deal of money. 12 states split $3.4 billion for education reform. Much of it was aimed squarely at closing the achievement gap, while Minnesota sat in the sidelines and watched. Some of the places where we lost our greatest points were in the great teachers and leaders category, where Minnesota earned 60% or a D minus, and 65% or a D in the state success factors categories. And as you know, the state success factors category grades a state's ability to actually implement the reforms that they submitted, because reviewers wanted to reward states that could actually follow through on the plans that they proposed. Winning states scored upwards of 90% in this category, and most states in the top tier scored about 80%. Minnesota got about 65%. And in the great teachers and leaders categories, we scored even lower. So as you can see here, and just a breakdown of some of the big critical pieces that I think all of you are thinking about and talking about with regards to different pieces of legislation that are coming before you, you can see that not only have we lost our place as a national leader in education policy, but we are certainly sliding towards the bottom in essential areas like teacher policy. Looking at other measures, Minnesota fares poorly when our education policies are compared to other states. For example, Minnesota received a D-minus overall from the National Council on Teacher Quality in its exhaustive 2009 report about state laws that affect teaching. The report analyzes how each state handles such things like teacher preparation, recruitment, hiring, and firing. And Minnesota received Ds or worse in 4 out of the 5 key areas. So what this says is that our laws are not designed to make sure that teachers are effective from the time that they are recruited to the day that they leave the public school system. Minnesota's laws ignore the effects, whether positive or negative, that teachers have on their students' academic progress. So taking all of these things together, what this points to us is that these are low marks point to a state that overall enjoys high levels of achievement across all student demographics, but that without the strong state policies necessary to close the achievement gap within certain demographics of students. And so we need to do something about it now. We conclude that, of course, that Minnesota needs to remodel our current educational system so that we can better meet the needs of our learners and begin to work to reclaim our reputation as educational leaders. Some of you have seen this being launched during our campaign launch and our organization launch a couple of weeks ago in response to what Secretary Duncan said while he was in town for the chamber dinner or for the chamber luncheon a couple of weeks ago. He really pointed out some of the pieces that we would need to put in place as a nation in order to resume our post as the top producer of college graduates. Not only did he speak about the importance of quality early education, especially for those who find themselves on the wrong side of the achievement gap, but he talked about ensuring great teachers and leaders in front of every single student, demanding for a culture of high expectations, upholding a college-going culture in high school, and graduating young people prepared to be successful in higher education. Most jarring, I think, for all of us is that he rightfully called us out on our lack of urgency towards adopting necessary policy changes. So to shine a spotlight on this issue, MNCAN has declared a snow emergency, if you will, or excuse me, a school emergency to replicate the snow emergency that happens here in St. Paul, as some of you know so well, and are asking policymakers to take action on 3 particular issue areas this session. The first one is removing roadblocks for teachers by opening alternate pathways. This is something that your committee has taken up already, and we appreciate your efforts to seriously consider the merits of that bill. So I'll just go through a couple of pieces here. As you already know, and Senator Daley spoke to the need to have highly effective teachers in the classroom in front of every single student. Minnesota's policies put sharp restrictions on who can enter teaching, limiting the school's access to high-quality instructors, especially for students who need them the most. How bad is it here? Again, to remind you that the National Council for Teaching Quality in 2009 gave Minnesota a D in delivering well-prepared teachers. Our state relies entirely on traditional teacher preparation programs, which require prospective teachers to get an education degree. And we all, I think, agree that every child deserves a great teacher, especially those who are struggling under our achievement gap. And while not every district has a teacher shortage, our achievement gap results make the quality shortage quite clear. So we believe that opening the door to the most successful alternative providers will grow the pool of high-quality candidates across the state of Minnesota. The second area is to clear a pathway for quality pre-K. So much of the work that we do in K-12 is built upon a solid foundation that is acquired in the early years. You all have had many, many experts come through here to talk about not only the return on high-quality early learning programs, but the things that could happen if we don't invest in high quality. So you know that socially and emotionally and intellectually, you can predict a child's later success in school and life based upon what their readiness factors look like when they are young. A reminder to all of you, too, that 90% of the brain growth happens before the age of 5, and so it is critically important that as we are looking to build a solid foundation for kids that we make sure we invest in these early years. Art Rolnick points out the economic return on this. He makes the economic case that, you know, society can enjoy up to a $16 return on investment for every dollar invested in early education, not to mention the personal benefits as well as the public benefits from less reliance on social programs as adults for families who and kids who are able to access these high-quality programs early on. But I think what makes all of us at this table really think hard about this is that these rewards can only happen if the investments are in high-quality programs that actually prepare kids for school. So you know that the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation has spent a great deal of resources and time to really look at this, to pilot it, as well as to do a lot of evaluation around this. And we feel like recommendation on this have a lot of merit to move forward. So we would support and hope that all of you would greatly consider an effort to pair together implementing statewide a quality rating system that holds a certain bar for what quality programs should look like in the state of Minnesota, while also thinking about pairing with that some financial incentives to allow families to be able to access these quality programs. And the last piece that will finish out my presentation for you today is to build a barometer for teacher effectiveness. I think this is a piece that all of you, again, have been talking about. I know Senator Bonoff has been a loud champion for this, certainly. And last year with the Race to the Top bills that were introduced in various forms, that this was included in some form or fashion. We think that it's time for us to really have a serious discussion about this. We know that in the state and throughout conversations through many coalition partners were having this conversation. MNCAN is trying to figure out how best to plug into this conversation at this point, given that a lot of momentum is just really starting to build on this. You all probably know very well that Minnesota is a national leader on data collection about schools, but we have built a strong information system. But good data isn't enough if it's not being used to improve outcomes for not only students, but to also identify how best to support our educators. We are currently missing key systems to bring data to the public, such as progress reports for individual students and reports with long-term data for districts and state-level decision-making. We are also without policies that would help educators use data in the classroom. And most importantly, I think what all of you have talked about to some extent is that there isn't data available being used to help inform decisions on teacher effectiveness and what that looks like. So in Minnesota, evaluations for teachers are rarely based on their effectiveness in the classroom and their contributions to student learning, and typically do not even differentiate teachers based on the performance or their needs. So I think what this points out to us is just that we have a lot of ways to go in terms of beginning the conversation from the perspective of data. We are a treasure chest of data, but we don't use it to do a lot. Not only do we not use it to support our students, but we don't use it to support our teachers, nor do we allow it to be collected in a meaningful way where district superintendents, school board members can have ways to look at that in an objective way and then make decisions based upon that. So in conclusion, I just want to be able to thank you again for allowing me to have the honor of being here today to tell you a little bit more about MNCAN, and certainly look forward to working with all of you moving forward.
Thank you very much, Ms. Farrell. Are there any questions that any of you have of her? Yes. Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, and thank you for the excellent presentation. What would be the most important thing we could do this session?
Ms. Barrow.
Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, I think that that there are many things that could be done this session. I think that in all of the decisions, I think it would be probably irresponsible for me to say there would be one most important thing. I think what I would urge you to do is to keep Minnesota's learners' interests paramount in every decision that you make. We acknowledge that in these tough decisions, in tough conversations, that there may be tension points that arise. We hope that MNCAN, if anything that we do, represents not only the voices of children in this conversation, but their best interests. So regardless of what policies come before you, we would hope that you keep children's best interest at heart and first.
Thank you very much. Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, members of the committee who may not know this, I think it's worth noting the relationship that Ms. Farrow has with one of our former colleagues, the sister of Senator Mimois. And so it's wonderful that you have now joined our legislative body and our family. And so please give our best to your sister as well.
Will do. Thank you so much, Senator. Yeah.
If there are no further questions, maybe we should give a little heads up on what's happening tomorrow. Go ahead. I'll let Greg Marcus speak for himself here.
Madam Chair is testing my memory, which is a dangerous thing.
Oh, yes.
Tomorrow,
for all of us.
That's right. Tomorrow we'll have two candidates in front of us for the board of the state academies, Minnesota State Academies. For confirmation, and then in addition to that, we'll have a bill by Senator Jungbauer that deals with teacher tenure, and then we have a bill in front of us by Senator Kubley that deals with allowing non-custodial parents to have access to student data.
So that's the agenda for tomorrow, and if there are no further questions or discussion, thank you again, Ms. Barrow and Mr. Orr, for being with us. We look forward to many more opportunities to work with you and hear from you.
Thank you,
Madam. So the meeting is adjourned.